like, it was hard.
I was expecting that, yeah. Where is that town that you're from?
Oh, it's in Alberta. In the mountains of British Columbia.
Yeah. Oh, it's in British Columbia? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in between Nelson and Selma.
Okay, nice. I'm from California, so I don't know.
Are you?
Yeah,
are
I don't know a lot about small towns.
I'm from here.
Yeah, he is. I'm from SoCal though, so I don't know. Oh, we got there's some tension actually.
How long have you lived here for?
Almost 5 years.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I came here for school.
Okay.
I just finished at UBC actually.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, it's okay, I guess.
You miss it?
just CITR, actually, not UBC. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. No one's listening. No one's listening.
Oh yeah.
It's true. Anyway, I'm gonna play one more song, I guess, or maybe two, but from Cult Babies, their new band. They used to be Bleeding Hearts. Or members from Bleeding Hearts, and they're playing a show after the show at the Emily Carr parking lot, and it's going to be at the Rainbow Connection or Red Gate, and they're playing with Fake Tears as well. But anyway, I'll play that, and then we'll chat a little after. So here is Cult Babies with Good Death. So that marks the end of Chips and Dip. Thanks for listening, and thanks Cindy Lee for coming to UBC and on the show. It was fun having you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and don't forget to check out their show tonight. It's an early one. I think it has to end before 11, right? Yeah.
11 o'clock.
Yeah, so it's maybe starts at 9 or something, but there are two other great bands playing. It's at the Emily Carr parking lot. Anyway, thanks for listening, and next up is Ink Studs with your host, Robin.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
You're listening to Ink Studs. Oh. Sorry about that. That was a fail. I'm sorry, I failed everyone. Pause. There we go. I'll restart that. You're listening to Ink Studs on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Robin, the guy that's been hosting the show. You know what? I think it's been almost to the date, exactly 8 years now. I've been doing Ink Studs.
I actually knew that, and that's why I came out here.
Did you?
As a surprise to celebrate this grand achievement.
Why are you screwing with me, Joe? That would be my special guest this week, my good friend Joe Keating, all the way up from Portlandia.
Don't call it that.
I called it that before the show because of the wonderful statue.
Uh-huh.
Portlandia.
Yeah, that's true.
I didn't know about the statue, and a friend told me about it on a trip down there for Stumptown one year.
Your friend Kerry Brownstein?
No, it was Fred Armisen.
Fred Armisen.
Yeah.
I saw him only once in Portland, and it was after, I think, The Dark Knight Rises. It was pretty, yeah. So that's all I know about
You got to have more of that story. Like, you both went to see The Dark Knight Rises. Did he jump up in the middle of the movie and, like, go, my God, this movie makes no sense, but it's pretty?
No, you're missing the point of this Joe story. The Dark Knight Rises is what it calls it when he exposes people. So he exposes himself to criminals to break up crimes. It's a little bit of community service that Joe does for Portland. Landia.
Thanks, Robin.
That was Brandon. Brandon will be helping with the hosting duties today, as well as we're joined by Brandon's local, our latest guest of Bradward's Home for Wayward Boys, Ash. How you doing, Ash?
Doing okay, Robin. Thank you.
I hope it's okay to call your home that. I mean, you have Joe and Ash staying there right now.
I have a wayward lady show up there sometimes, too.
That just didn't sound appropriate. Joe, thank you for coming up here.
Thanks, man. Yeah, absolutely.
You came up early. Joe, part of the reason I'm having Joe on today, Brandon, stop that. Don't intimidate my guests. Part of the reason I had Joe come in today is Joe is in town. Joe Keating. I keep saying Joe. I feel like it's not enough to say when you say Joe, because it could be any guy.
That's true.
You say Joe. Joe Keating is up in town today, this weekend, to do the Heritage Hall Comic Convention on Sunday at Maine and between 15th and 16th. This is, what, your third time doing one of those cons, or second?
I think it's my second time. Last time I came up here with another good friend of the show, I assume, Mortet. And
he refuses to come on.
Is he really?
Yeah. So, I also refuse to have someone on the show that lies.
Well, he bends the truth.
I would say he's just more in his own reality.
Right. Yeah, it's true.
I love you, Justin, aka Mortet, but I don't trust you. So Joe's coming up, or is here for the con. Your latest book right now is, you've got the Hulk.
Marvel Knight Hulk.
Yeah. Hulk Goes to France.
Hulk Goes to France.
I feel like it's almost like, when I say that, it's like, what was the vacation movies? The National Lampoon?
National Lampoon, yeah.
Is it kind of like that with the Hulk?
It pretty much is, yeah. No, definitely. That's pretty much it. That's my pitch.
Just showed up at the Marvel office in New York. Okay, here we go. So the Hulk goes to France, tries to go to Euro Disney.
It's pretty good. Euro Wally World. Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. They didn't have the rights.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I'm sorry, Joe.
It hasn't for me. I watch those shows all the time, the movies all the time.
Yeah. It's called research. we were at a coffee shop earlier, and I was like, Joe, you work on the Hulk? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, Does he have nipples in your comic? And Joe's like, I don't know. And he looked up and he's like, no, he doesn't. So here's my theory. I don't know. I've only looked at the recent images that Joe has. I think I think when Dr. Banner transforms, he loses the nipples.
When I worked in a comic store, one of the fellows that was part of the store would make models, and he was obsessed over figuring out whether or not the Hulk was an innie or an outie.
I use an innie.
No, yeah,
all the way.
Sense. Yeah. Your Hulk is an innie?
Yeah, I am, man.
What about Red Hulk?
Red Hulk does not appear in my four issues. I don't know what his deal is.
Joe refuses to acknowledge the existence of Red Hulk.
Isn't he from a different planet?
No, that's... No, it's General Thunderbolt Ross transformed into Red Hulk.
Wow.
And Red She-Hulk is Betty Ross. What's up? official handbook of the Marvel Universe sitting right here.
Don't run out of ideas when you do Marvel Comics.
Thanks, Brandon.
There's plenty still there. There's think of all the other colors of Hulks you could do.
All right. Now, one reason I like having Joe on is Joe's also been a big supporter of the Ink Studs, and I'm hoping I can return the favor. One hand scratches the other or something. I don't know how the phrase goes. Joe actually came up to the book launch I did here at Blim many years ago, and he's wearing a Blim sweater right now.
Wait, I think that was at Floating World, wasn't it?
No, the one in Vancouver.
Oh.
You came up for?
Oh, right.
And I loaded you up with Beaver Buzz?
Yeah. Well, that was a good trip. That was some time ago. Oh, yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, you know, we're talking about the way over here. You know, there's not a lot of venues to, you know, here. Al Columbia and Jeff Darrow on the same podcast, you know? So, yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. I mean, that's the thing. It's like with me and comics, I was just writing about this earlier this week, where just, I've never understood, like, I read this type of comic. Like, I read just X-Men, or I read just Love and Rockets, or I read just this. Like, so I like having a source where, you know, I mean, it covers a lot of different ground, you know? Whether it's Euro Comics guys or, you know, I mean, that Columbia interview, I think, is one of the best things I've heard in a really long time.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
I'll give you some money for that later.
Yeah.
That's much appreciated. Now, we've talked a lot personally, so it's going to be one of those interesting conversations where I kind of navigate that. Uh-huh. And one of the things to think about is, knowing you, Joe Keating, is comics are kind of core to who you are.
No, it's not kind of. It's. I mean, I have other interests for sure. I mean, I do love movies and I love historical. You know, I mean, history. I guess I don't know. I read a lot. Brandon Graham's being a really unhelpful guest, but you know, a lot of movies. I'm really into music. But comics is everything to me. When it comes down to it, it really is. You know, my number one love. It's the thing that really built, like, why I wanted to write stories and how I wanted to write stories. I mean, I'm not making comics so I can make, you know, my TV show pitch or whatever. I really just want to write comics to write comics. I don't even remember how I got into them. They were just always there. They've been around my house my whole life. No one in my family read them. They don't even know where they came from. My theory is that, you know, I think Masters of the Universe and G.I. Joes were packaged with comics in America. I don't know about here in Canada. But if you even know what G.I. Joe is.
They're the nationalist.
Do you have, like, G.I. Mounties or something like that, as opposed to G.I. Joe?
No, we
like
grew up with G.I. Joe.
Has Snake, a moose.
Who doesn't love Snake Eyes? Brandon,
you
better
know
who not.
Who doesn't love Snake Eyes? Cobra.
Oh.
Yeah. But so I don't know. And so I've always. And it's not, like I said, it's not just one. It was never just one type of thing. I grew up in part in Santa Monica, California, and there was a couple comic stores, including Heidi Ho Comics. That just had everything. The shirt I'm wearing today is a Mickey Rat shirt. And I remember as a kid, like, the thing about Heidi Ho Comics, they had everything and it was all next to each other. It wasn't all separated out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you'd have, you know, whatever, Eric Larson's Sinister Six run right next to, like, a stack of Mickey Rat comics. And I remember seeing Mickey Rat, the cover of that, and just being, like, disturbed but fascinated by it. And, I mean, there was stuff I never knew it was Eurocomics. I never knew it was underground or whatever arbitrary and I frankly feel irrelevant label you want to put on it. The biggest one, though, was at my local library. My dad always forced me to rent something. And to get around it, I would just rent out the same Spider-Man versus Venom trade over and over and over again.
That's the Todd McFarlane.
Yeah, the Todd McFarlane run. But one day it was reported as stolen. There was only one other comic book there. Because they had, like, Calvin and Hobbes, which I did like, and Peanuts, but those were comic strips. Like, that was the only thing I ever made a distinction on with the comic strip or comic books. But the only other thing they had was Mouse. And so I was like, whatever, I'll pick this up. I don't know what the heck it is. And I picked it up, and that was really, like, transformative on my brain, how I process stuff. So then, yeah, when I would start going to IDO, I would just peek in whatever. And I mean, like, I saw stuff I didn't realize till what it was till later. Stuff I became obsessed with much later in life, like Hugo Pratt or Mobius or whatever. But yeah, it was all just there. So anyway, I mean, yeah, I remember growing up and people would talk about what they want to do when they get older. And when people would tell me, I want to be a doctor or whatever, I'd be like, do you know you can write comic books? Like, that's, like, a thing you can do. Like, well, I don't know, why would you? Like, I seriously couldn't process why you'd want to do anything else. So, yeah, it's for true.
Now, you didn't just jump in and immediately start writing comics, though.
No, no. Well, my thing was, well, professionally, I mean, I always wanted to write comics. Like, when I was 10 years old, I tell a story a lot, so I'll make it brief, but I read Spawn number 10, and it was the issue that Dave Sim wrote, because Todd's whole thing was people were criticizing his writing. He's like, fine, I'll hire all the best writers in comics. And so he hired, you know, Frank Miller and Alan Moore and Grant Morrison and all these guys, Neil Gaiman. That don't really work out too well for him. But what did work out well was he did an issue that was written by Dave Sim that was a really weird issue, and it was all about, like, what creator-owned comics means and whatever, and I didn't understand it at first, but as I went on, I realized it was, you know, talking about that human beings make these and everything, so when I read that, I was like, oh my god, I can make these. It's not just coming out of this ether, this magic or whatever. So ever since then, I wanted to do it, but yeah, as I got older, I kind of became, you know, jaded with the idea that just doesn't happen to people or whatever. Until I was living in Portland the first time, and my girlfriend at the time was going to move to San Francisco, and I was really depressed with college, and she was like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, it's always comics, but that just doesn't happen. So she was like, well, why don't you move to San Francisco with me and do comics there? And I said, no. And again, my dad, who is never the type of guy to say stuff like this, was like, yeah, I think you should do it. Like, look, go to San Francisco, try comics out. If it doesn't work, then you go back to school, and you're in San Francisco in your 20s. Like, how? That's not bad. So I went, and the first gig I ever got, a friend of mine was drawing a Freak Force backup in Savage Dragon, and he needed a color flatter. And so that was my first gig. And from color flatting, I got to know people, and I got to eventually, I mean, I'm skipping over a lot of stuff because I tell a story a lot. I got hired at Image Comics. And I did everything from basically, like, people laugh when I say this because the idea is kind of ridiculous, but, like, the mailroom boy at Image, to then I did, like, scheduling, printing, distribution, and marketing. Like, this is over years. I mean, this is almost a decade I spent there. Oh, not that long. Maybe, like, 6 years, 7 years.
You're not that old, Joe.
I'm not that old. I'm getting there.
Like you're as old as Brandon here.
Yeah, it's true. He is old.
I could hear what you guys are saying through my ear horn. I was so upset.
So, yeah, and, I mean, I loved it all. Like, it was fun. I just knew that... What it got to be very quickly wasn't just I wanted to write comics, but I wanted to help create comics and help other people create comics. Like, one of the things I did do at Image was a friend of mine at the time and I started an anthology called Popgun, and that was just like I was seeing all this cool shit, and I was like, I want this to exist. And, you know, I just put stuff out. And to this day, like, I'm going to be helping out a creator whose stuff I like a lot. It's a cartoonist who I met when I was in Angoulême. And I'm just basically helping them editorially, just making this stuff happen, you know. That's it. I want to help comics exist. And then what it has become for me is, yeah, writing has become my primary thing. And I don't know, I just think it's the best way to do storytelling these days. I mean, with movies, I think it's so restrictive. To get any distribution, you need to pay $120 million just to make it, and then $120 million to market it and distribute it. And to me, it's like that just saps all creativity with a you know, treasured few. But, I mean, anyone at this table can go home, or listening, can go home and make a comic and publish it. And I don't know if it'll be successful, but, you know, they can do it. And I don't know. I find so much creative liberty. Like, with my newer creator-owned stuff coming out right now, I'm trying to make it difficult to make it into a movie. Because I'm playing a lot with the artists and I'm working with. We're all playing around with the form a lot and making it really, like showing... For us, like, what we love about comics, you know? And, you know, where we want to see at least our stuff kind of going. So, yeah.
I think I'm going to do a quick music break.
Okay.
I'm going to get you to because I forgot your code. We're not going to speak your code over the their airwaves for all of Vancouver listen. We'll be back in a couple minutes. I'm sitting here with Joe Keating and Brandon Graham's being very patient and quiet, and I'm sure you'll have a lot of things to say once we get back from the music break. Do you have something you want to say now, Brandon?
No, I'm cool. I'm working on it. I'm working on a comic.
All right, so we'll be right back. You got it, Joe?
Yep.
Press play.
You build bombs, you're familiar with explosions. The flat palms are the holiday. But there's slime crawling back up from the ocean. You can't keep everyone at with an accident or failure. It all starts with a great big bang. And guess who's gonna have to play the jailer? And guess who's gonna lead the chain gang? Gamma ray. Gamma ray. Ooh, gamma ray. Gamma ray. And one thing leads to another, and none of it's good. None of it's good. You cannot help but foster. There's some weakness you can't forgive. And from that you can turn it to a monster, a nightmare that you force yourself to live. Gamma ray. Gamma ray.
All right. Apparently, we had a hot mic there while Brandon was saying inappropriate things, so I apologize to the city of Vancouver and all the listeners here. The light thing on the dashboard, on the board here, isn't lighting up. But apparently, we did very well at the last fundraiser here on CITR. So we're getting a new board. So hopefully, at that point, it will light up and we won't have Brandon's inappropriate things coming on air. Because he'll never say anything inappropriate on air, right, Brandon?
I'm a kitten. No, it's
not. Now, one of the things we're talking about is, Joe, you were talking a bit about helping folks and working with folks. And part of the reason Brandon is here, and Brandon can jump in now, politely, is I know you're really supportive towards getting King City an image.
Right.
And same with James Stokoe's.
Sure.
You know, Orcstain. Yeah, remember Marian's that comic?
Beast and,
stuff. Well, you are Marian's Beast, but that's something else.
Heyo!
Oh, I wish I thought of that one like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So tell me about that relationship there between you two and kind of the support you got from Joe.
Well, I mean, I should back up a little bit. I mean, I feel it's really important and essential to pay it forward because I had a lot of help from guys like Eric Larson and Eric Stevenson and Moritat when I was coming up. And without those, and a bunch of other people too, and without their support, and one thing that, you know, Moritat really, really put, Tommy was, you really, really got to keep it going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Moritat is really like, he's almost the comic book godfather of our scene.
Well, so. I mean, if it wasn't for him, wasn't for him, I don't know that we would have met, at least at the time we met. Because, as I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, the first time I met you really briefly at an Emerald City Comic Con, I bought a copy of Escalator from you, but I didn't really. I just thought it looked cool, but I don't think we really talked because I knew Corey a bit at the time. But as I recall, the next time I met you was when he drove us all to that pizza place, right?
Yeah, we met at a pizza place. Me and Corey Lewis and Justin Moritat and Joe.
You guys shared a pie.
We did. We shared a pie, and then it was funny because Justin was like, all right, everyone bring some copies or whatever you're working on. And then I think Corey at the time brought Stab Kids, and I don't remember what I brought. And then, but
Brad, did he really do a comic called Stab Kids?
I think so, right?
Was Corey. That what it was
called? But anyway, it was like a mini comic.
Jesus Christ.
And then Brandon, who I don't really know, is like, here's my comic, and it was Pillow Fight. You know? So it was just like,
For those that don't know, it's an adult-oriented comic with... erotic tones.
And it was like that scene in Step Brothers. The moment I saw it, I was like, "Do we just become best friends?"
Yeah, so. No, we did become. But yeah, Pillow Fight is my erotic lesbian schoolgirl comic made for no lesbian to ever set eyes on. Please, please, no.
But then, you've since grown up,
huh? The reason I can get on my high horse and be so pompous is that I came from doing porn comics and I've learned to error my ways.
I was waiting for you to say you come from the streets, but Joe was saying something.
Yeah, well, I mean, and so that's how, and to get to know, see these guys' stuff, I mean, that's what led to all that, you know, it was just seeing cool stuff. And I forget what I was doing in Image at the time. I feel it was pretty early on. I think I was still even just doing traffic management stuff.
I think you were promotions.
Was I promotions then?
Yeah, publicity. Okay.
So, yeah, and then, I don't know, then that's when Eric Stevenson got involved, and I mean, I don't know, I think you see people with who are doing cool work, and I think the cool thing about Image is that that's basically all it's about, and, you know, having them retain the rights and stuff like that, and I knew what Brandon was going through, but I mean, Eric is really, I mean, he was so, I mean, he's really an unsung hero in a lot of ways on a lot of stuff, but with King City, I mean, that guy... I mean, he went to bed, and he's wholly responsible. I don't know if he wants me to say this, but responsible for me having my career, you know, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, Stevenson is really, and it was really amazing to interact with Image after, because I'd had a fairly long comic book interaction. I've been doing comics professionally for 10 years or whatever before then, and interacting with Image it was amazing because it was like there was no just like we're having a meeting about your work on Wednesday. It was just like Stevenson being like, "All right, let's do it."
Yeah. The movie thing I was quoting earlier about the statistics was from a speech Steve Soderbergh gave. And the other thing I feel is relevant to Image beyond why it's so much better to do comics is Stevenson especially kind of believes in horses, not races, in terms of working with talent. And, you know, really believed in me when, I mean, I don't think, I mean, before Hell Yeah, I had done a couple of short stories and stuff like that, you know. And then he gave me the big break, or gave him, I mean, and really in a way, both of us a kind of huge break with the extreme stuff.
Now, for folks that don't know what the extreme stuff was, give us a conceptual idea.
So way back in the heyday of the early 90s, Image Comics started with all the big name artists and writers that were working at Marvel and DC Comics, at least the people who were brave enough to make their own comics. And one of those guys was Rob Liefeld, who started, I think it was the first Image book with Youngblood number one. And from that, I mean, it was so successful. I mean, all their books were at the time that they launched. I mean, Rob was able to launch a whole line of characters, and he was such, I mean, I like his work a lot, and I think the thing he gets really undervalued for is being such a great idea man. And, like, and he created all these, I mean, just huge volume of characters. And so they kind of went away after a while, and then I remember it was November 2010, I think, when I was going freelance for a little while. Stevenson sent me this email, and all it said was like, "Hey, I got a really weird idea. Do you have time to talk?" And I was like, "Sure, of course." And he was like, "What we want to do, we want to bring back those old Extreme characters, him and Rob, and we want to bring like kind of newer and different talent, people you wouldn't expect to go with it." And he wanted me to pitch on Glory, and then we were talking, and he was like, you know, about what else they want to do, and they're like, with Prophet, we kind of want to do a more sci-fi angle, and I was like, dude, the best sci-fi book is published by Image, it's King City, and then we talked to you at Emerald City Comic Con, right?
I think there's a long process before that, but also you're very nice, Joe, but... There's a long process before that where, because you were working on Glory for a long time, and I was talking to you.
Yeah, well, you helped me. We were trying to figure out, like, we bad idea, because once you were introduced the idea of Extreme, you're the only other person I had besides Eric and Rob to bounce ideas off of, and so we're talking about Glory conceptually, and you know who to bring on, and you were the one who hooked me up with Ross.
Right, yeah, Ross Campbell.
Yeah, because I talked about Ross Campbell. Excuse me. Yeah, from Wet Moon over at Oni Press. Yeah, I mean, Ross, you know, I should back up. I had very concrete ideas in terms of what I want to do with Glory, in terms of the overall concept, and I wanted her to look like a warrior, and I wanted her to be a badass, because she was a badass, and that was it, you know what I mean? And so I really wanted to work with someone who could really convey that, and yeah, you're the one who was like, hey, you should check out Ross Campbell stuff, and I was like, I'd seen Wet Moon, I liked it, and then you were telling me to go to his DeviantArt, and I was astonished, man. Like, he had all these really cool pieces I've never... I it was like fan art, right? For like, I mean, he did this Kitty Pryde piece that was the thing I sent to Stevenson, who was like, oh my God, this is the guy.
Yeah, Russ is really a really fantastic and interesting artist, just in how he thinks about characters and how he thinks about the readers and the kind of the diversity that he's putting into it and how much he's thinking about. I think he puts a lot of thought into thinking about like what it would be like, what it's like to be a female comics reader, or what it's like to be underrepresented. And he really, like, you know, he's like the opposite of a Milo Manara or whatever that draws the same character over and
over.
Well,
I mean, that's one thing I really wanted out of the cast of Glory, was just a huge amount of diversity in all sorts of ways and people and backgrounds. And like, I wanted to be an international book. And he was someone who really took, who was really conscious of that and like fashion. And he got me really into like, something I'm obsessing over with my next creator-owned book is the fashion of the characters and like what that means and like you know how it looks. And I all came from collaborating with Ross, and I don't know that Glory would be the book it became. Like, I feel like especially the first half of Glory is what we planned out, and the second half is what it became because of our collaboration. I mean, originally there's sort of a myth about Glory in that, you know, it was ended outside of our control. And the fact is, both Eric and Rob Liefeld told us to keep going if we wanted to, but with working with Ross, we figured it wasn't this big story. It was a story about these two people, Glory and one of the main characters, Riley Barnes. And once that story came to an end, why continue it? And he really, I mean, that was the thing. I would always think about plot and the bigger picture and stuff like that. But Ross, one thing he taught me more than anything else was how all the small character stuff can be as, you know, all the, I mean, this is going to sound like really corny, and I'm sure I'm going to get a bunch of shit for this, but just how the small character moments, like, that's the big epic stuff more than, like, all the stuff exploding, which there's still tons of stuff exploding in all my books.
Hell yeah.
Exactly.
Well, no, I think that's really intelligent, because I always, people in comics, it's really funny, people get so guarded about their big ideas, and I'm always like, it doesn't
like, matter.
Ideas are bullshit. They're worthless. It's execution is everything.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I mean, I think a lot of things, you know, I mean, I'm not saying good books don't come out of this, but I feel people get so stuck on, oh, I just got this idea, and it's this means this. And it's like, that means nothing. Like, that's like an empty shell of an idea.
But what if it was on acid?
Oh, yeah. Or in the Twilight Zone, which is like, you're not Rod Serling.
I got an idea. We're going to put Tom Cruise in the future,
yeah,
and he's exactly. a clone, and it's going to be a movie.
Well,
and,
we walked by there filming a TV show, and Joe told us the premise of it, and it was so...
Yeah, it was the Carl Urban show, where he's like... Almost Human, where he's like, he's a detective, and he's got a robot sidekick! And it's like, it sounds like a
bad... Everybody hates robots.
Who was that actor on The Simpsons? Troy McClure. It sounded like a bad Troy McClure, you know?
I totally didn't think you were serious. Like, I thought you were totally screwing with me.
No, right when you walk into your building.
It's called Hot and Cold. Dennis Hott's a police detective who hates...
It is robot
head. Cold 0007 is a... is a by-the-book robot. Yeah. I got an image book. We got a pitch, by the way.
Yeah. Can we get Eric Stevenson online now?
Text him and he can call in. No reminder, folks. I am talking to Joe Keating, joined by Brandon Graham and Ash. I don't actually know your last name, Ash.
Oh, Ash HG. Is my name
HG?
I have two last names, so I'm dealing with.
That is, that you've got like the coolest name. My name is Joe. Well, he's Brandon.
Well, there's a little. I mean, when I was dealing with editors and putting stuff out, it became too complicated to say. My real name is Ashley. So I'm just Ashley. Ash HG. Yeah. Plus, I don't like. The whole internet,
The internet
real name. I kind of have some paranoia about that, so I kept it like I had my privacy still.
I should have
stuck my government with name.
My Joe Keating is my pen name. My birth name is Laser Beam McQuaid.
What was the name you had for Jeffrey Brown?
What? I don't think I had a name for Jeffrey.
No, we had a name for Jeffrey Brown.
I don't know. I like Jeffrey.
No. He was there. It was like,
this is good radio.
Laser Bolt or something.
What? This is good radio. What was the name for that guy that we came up with 3 years ago?
We were with
at Stumptown or whatever was that, right?
Are you drawing penises in front of your eyes?
I drew one earlier and made a note for Joe. That's my note.
All right, nice.
Thanks.
Sorry, I made a lot of noise here. Inkstud CITR 101.9 FM.
And you can hit up Robin on Twitter at Inkstuds if you want to ask Joe any questions.
That means I got to open my Twitter.
That's right, you do.
Oh, yeah, there we go. And if you want to call in, you can call in at 604-822-2487. I think Ash has a question. Come closer to the mic, Ash.
You can actually send Ash questions on his MySpace profile. And my CompuServe number is 956813214 at CompuServe.com. So feel free to send questions to there as well.
Did you find it limiting to work on the Hulk?
No, I mean...
With the editors and stuff?
No. I mean, I think there's a... I mean, I don't know. Maybe I've just been lucky, and I don't feel any need to hold back. I should back up a little bit more. Glory came out, and that was a thing. Like, Glory... I mean, Hell Yeah kind of got me Glory, because they're like, okay, you want to write comics? You're writing Hell Yeah? Do Glory.
I love the puns you have there.
Thanks, man.
Hell Yeah got you Glory.
Brandon's, like, holding it in. He's shaking. but anyway, so that got me, and then Glory got me, Marvel hit me up, and specifically Steve Wacker, and they wanted me to do another book, the Thanos thing. It didn't work out because, I don't know, some movie stuff or whatever. I don't really know or care. What I do know and care about is that Steve really took care of me, and he was like, hey, man, I want you to do this new book. So I did a book called Morbius, and it was basically, I learned how to work with Marvel Comics and stuff like that, and I had Steve and his editor, Sana Amant, who helped me out a lot. And it was the cool, it was like, okay, this is how Marvel works, and I got to figure out, because it is different than Image, because, like, in the end, I don't own any of these characters, I can't just do whatever.
Sure.
You know, even on Glory, you know, that, I mean, it was basically, it was given the freedom of, like, a creator-owned type of book. But anyway, so, on Hulk, they liked what I was doing a lot on Morbius. They're like, okay, for 4 issues, you and Peter Kowalski, like, just do whatever you want with the Hulk.
You did show me some stuff that didn't make it through today. That was the Hulk ripping giant infants in two.
Well, I should be clear. Yeah, we'll get to
that. Oh, gee, I wonder why that didn't make it in, Brandon.
Well, no, I was like in Akira how Tetsuo just turned into a giant baby. And the thing with Marvel Knights Hulk, there's kind of a misconception. People are like, oh, it's Hulk in France, it's Euro Comics Hulk, which is true for the first issue. But what I wanted to have is that each issue evolves into something else, transforms into something else, kind of like the Hulk. And
what happened to the beret when he turns into the Hulk?
So anyway, so the first issue
turns into a breadstick.
Thanks, guys. The first issue was kind of Eurocomic stuff. The second issue is manga stuff. And I was like, oh, I want a cool big Tetsuo baby thing in there, you know? And Peter drew it, and it was just like a baby. Like, it was like, it was, and it looked cool. It was a badass looking baby. And then in my script, I had the baby was going to, Hulk was going to tear up this Tetsuo thing, but not an actual baby. So I got pencils in, but it looked cool. I mean, the final book has been awesome. Beyond stuff like that, it's been really freeing, you know? I mean, I can't just, like, kill the Hulk or whatever, and Bruce Banner's dead at the end.
Sure.
But as long as I put the toys back in the sandbox the way I gave them to me, I could do whatever I want. And, you know, I've worked at other companies, and we could talk about that, where it wasn't as freeing, but I think Marvel, the thing about Marvel is there are two things. One is, I feel, and this is my experience as a creator, they're not afraid of what the characters are. They're not afraid of their superheroes, and in my experience, they find a talent that they want for that book and kind of let that talent, for the most part, you know, do what the talent or the writer and artist and whatever does best, you know. That's been my experience.
And then when you get old, they sue you.
Yeah, well...
Brandon, be nice to Joe today.
I'm being nice. I'm just, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I do. I mean, that's why I also have my Image stuff. You know.
Is it collected in all four? Is it a?
It's a mini series. That'll be I assume it'll be a hardcover, or softcover, or something. Right. Something.
I think it's time for another music break.
All right. Let me set this up.
All right. Rucka, rucka, and we'll make sure the mics are off, Brandon. All right, we'll be right back.
Transmutation, brand new statement. I have you gaping open. Check it out, y'all. Now let's see, Deltron Z, Art Avenger, let's start the adventure. Pinch shell with nerve gas, absurd blast, crash a spacecraft, I'm bio-enhanced. Pyro advanced,
series, monstrous evolution, headed tooth and nail, scoop a trail, super sleuth, a new race, mad creator, savage nature, worldwide web, the ebb and flow, light years from watchful eyes, where my thoughts provide objective, the artist's eyes, the pompous prophecies, underground societies I ought to lead, asteroid surfing, castor oil burping, the darkest side of humanity animated, the grand awakening, plan to take it in, I demand your patronage, mobilize my battle takes, but cluster small, empty Austin, empty Mars, many MCs cruise low earth orbit, easier for me to use my search warrant, drift by a star, absorb it and store it, leave Taurus, Corvus, my galaxy's gorgeous, quantum jump, I'm right at your doorstep,
positive contact. Positive contact.
Well, what it is you're talking about.
Positive contact.
Positive contact. Even if the record skips, I still rest. Now I catch more wreck with fast ignition. My last decision, pulse amplification. Tamper with napalm, I want y'all to stay calm. Alien annihilation, I stay armed to the grill piece and kill beef. 20% matter, 30% is energy. Assembling to become a living being. Evaporative radiation phase to station. I get higher aviation.
Positive contact.
Positive contact.
Positive contact. Positive contact.
Reactors on.
Positive contact. Positive contact.
I rise like helium, you're falling rapidly. Trapped in apathy while I track your speed. I'm what you call a legend, dominance with Armageddon. Gives me a warm reception. Trouble war with weapons, installation. Blow them to stardust, distance 12 parsecs. Enthusiast phalanx with my literary talents. Just a bit of balance, rip the silence of space. All star systems are our victims. Atomic synonymous with ominous. Implications of inflammation, of information and entertainment. Tribe attack dialect, you gotta earn my respect. I'm like Gamera to amateurs, hit them with a cannonball. And in all this confusion, the fusion of music and mind dissipates, translucent illusions. Search the ruins with automator, hit the walls with a carbonator. Hit our missiles, just regenerate. The sonic soldiers allow us to demonstrate. Emergency dispatch, skyscrapers rip back. For the impact, their flow is mismatched. My style's protected by heat shield and ceramics. Don't panic, I landed on planet Mercury. Gave it atmosphere, set up my headquarters. I'll never get captured here. Your tear, clap your ear with soul sonic, mantronic, phonic, turn your brain to an omelet. I hold a comet in bondage with my dominance. Take a space shuttle to escape trouble. Bounce through the Milky Way. Not many MCs feel this way.
Positive contact.
Positive contact.
Positive contact.
Positive contact.
Positive contact. Positive contact.
Positive contact.
Positive contact.
Even if the record skips, I still rest.
Right, all right, all right. I gotta be careful. I don't want to sound like what's his name. All right. I can't even think of his name.
Quagmire?
Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, Matthew McConaughey.
All right, all right, all right.
It's always a danger.
It's always, well, you know, I look like him. And it's something I have to deal with every day is my...
It is weird sitting with you and not like, wow, I love your work.
I know.
Matthew McConaughey.
What was the movie he did?
I don't know. If you were like, we're gonna get dead air until you figure out the Matthew McConaughey movie, we would ruin this radio.
Marley and Me, was that him?
I hope not.
Muggles and Me. I have a internet question from Sandra Lands.
Uh-huh.
Sandra asks, does Joe feel like his writing is involved, and does he see it heading in a particular direction as he keeps working on new things?
That's a good question.
Nope. Next question. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Hey, Joe, how's it feel to be a dick?
I think you have to. You know what I mean? Like, I think where I was on Glory versus when it started versus where it ended is very different. And like I said, I think, you know, working with my collaborators, I think a better example is this. Like, Hell Yeah was a book that I'm very, very proud of, and I'm very proud of Andrei Zemanovich. which I've known for years, and I always butcher his last name. But that was a book about why I loved, in part, I mean, about other things, why I loved Image Comics and superhero comics. And not
wrestling?
So much, not so much wrestling. There isn't a book like that in me. But
you don't love wrestling, Joe?
I do love wrestling. Both professional and amateur.
Erotic.
And
we got plans for later.
Yeah. And so my next image, and so it's very much about the comics I loved growing up. Whereas my next image book is very much where I want to go with comics. You know, that's very much more forward thinking. Not, and again, there's nothing wrong with Hell Yeah at all. But you know, it's just what I'm writing now is very different, and I'm also in my creator own stuff venturing. Away from superhero stuff, where I thought I would, which I still love superheroes. I'm obviously still writing them at Marvel, but it's not so much where I want to take my creator own work. So yeah, that's definitely changed. It's definitely evolved. I feel every book evolves the more you go along, because I feel like why I love working on comics, period, is the collaboration aspect of it, and where things go from there. Like the book I have coming out. Through Image earlier next year was originally going to be a very, I guess, grounded type of series, very much like kind of this real world stuff. And when I saw the artist's work, she just blew me away, and I was just like, why would I just have you draw the real world? You know, so it became a much more fantastical thing, and it very much influenced my writing. So yeah, no, absolutely.
Brendan had a question.
Oh yeah, I was going to I noticed, Joe, when you started out, Hell Yeah, specifically in Glory, you had these really long, just like, you were like planning on doing your Savage Dragon.
Yeah.
Essentially. And I'm kind of interested in hearing you talk about your perception of how comics have changed from working on comics as opposed to being a fan of them for so long.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I think Glory is sort of the best example where I had these huge plans, and just by working on the book, I just realized I don't want to do that, you know? And I've seen a lot, again, like you were saying, you know, it changes when you're working in comics versus when you're not, because you see a lot of people who don't know when to leave the party, you know. And with Glory, I was like, people still ask if they can do more Glory or whatever, and I'd rather they ask that than, oh yeah, your first 12 issues of Glory was awesome, but then you did, you know, 50 more and they were kind of lame. And the truth of the matter is, like, when I look back, the original idea is to have the continue Glory. It was like different books. So I was like, well, why don't I just do a ton of cool different books with different collaborators, and as opposed to like do, I mean, I think I've got a Savage Dragon in me, so to speak. I don't think I want to do it now. You know, this next image book has the potential to be that, but I think I just want to concentrate on telling a cool story. And if it takes a year and a half or 2 years, that's awesome. If it goes longer, because we're into it, then yeah. But I mean, like, you know, I mean, as a reader, I mean, Savage Dragon, we should get into that a little bit.
Well, Brandon told me this, but you ran a fan club?
No. So, who ran a fan club?
It was a sing-along Savage Dragon themed group.
It was a clubhouse, I believe.
Well, no.
Oh, I mean, in a tree?
I have no shame in my of any of this. I just want to give credit where credit's due. Jim DeMonacis, who runs Emerald City Comic Con, he ran a listserv. That's how far back this is going. Called, like, I think it was just like the Savage Dragon Online Fan Club. And I believe I was one of the first 20 people to get in. And,
that's like zero ground for some ace comic book movers and shakers.
Yeah, no, there was, I mean, Augie DeBleek from CBR was on there. There's a few other guys on there.
I think that's a good approach you're taking, to just working on things in a particular pace.
Well,
more of an author approach of doing... moving on to the next one.
That's definitely what interests me now, as opposed to when I came in, because like I was saying earlier, it's like with comics you can do anything, you know. And I don't want to be a guy who's known for, or you're just the superhero guy, or you're just the crime guy, or whatever, you know. I want to do a whole different type of stuff. I mean, I'm even thinking about someday even drawing my own stuff. I just love the medium so much that I want to just keep going, and you know, whatever comes from that is great. But I just love just working in it, and however I'm working in it. And, you know, maybe years from now, I'll end up working back on the publishing side again, or maybe I don't even know. But I just know that...
You'll start your Mobius listserv.
What's that?
You'll start a Mobius listserv.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened already. Ian McEwan kind of has that locked in with his Tumblr. But, yeah, you know, I just, no matter what I'm doing in my life, comics will always be the center of it. And currently, that's, I love, yeah, just trying, writing different ways, you know.
You were talking earlier about the Savage Dragon thing, and you didn't finish.
Yeah, well, you're right. Yeah, no, the Savage Dragon was incredibly informative on me, because it was, and still is, because it was one guy doing his vision without anyone else. I mean, there was a colorist and a letterer. Even sometimes it was Eric doing both.
I love that he went back and redrew. Like, there were some fill-in issues.
Yeah, so they did an Image X month, and where everyone changed books, and Jim Lee did issues of Savage Dragon number 13, and it drove Eric so nuts that his run was broken. He went back, like, I think he was on issue 20 at the time. He went back and drew issue 13.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, you know how sometimes buildings won't have a 13th floor because it's unlucky? That would be kind of cool to do no 13th issue.
Yeah.
You know, you know what I liked from that Image thing? Sorry, just a little digression. Rob Liefeld's Shadowhawk issue.
Yeah.
I thought it was crazy.
Yeah.
It was like, really cool. It was so interesting. You know, this coming from me, who will next week probably interview the most obscure mini comic guy.
Yeah.
I really like that one.
Yeah, that's good.
He didn't like Jim Lee's...
No, he had no problem with Jim Lee.
Yeah, but I'm saying...
It was just the fact that he intended to do Savage Dragon, and still does intend to do Savage Dragon his whole life, and there was one issue that he didn't draw.
Oh, you mean he redrew the...
He was like a whole different story.
Wait, who drew Wildcats that month?
Wildcats... I'm not sure. Was Eric Larson?
Yeah.
He basically an issue of Freak Force in Wildcats. Yeah, but
cool.
I learned so much about the form of comic storytelling that, you know, even stuff that's like, it's more effective surprise on the left hand page, that every page is its own unit and every panel is its own unit and everything needs to progress in some way.
Yeah, it's interesting. Me and you have big debates about this because because Larson is so trained in Kirby era comics,
and I come from
such kind of a manga background that, like, you'll talk about, like, you got to end, you want to make a page turn. And I was like, nobody cares.
Yeah,
I mean, I completely agree with Larson on this one, yeah.
It's weird, I've never thought about a page turn in my entire life.
No, I very much do.
In the sense that each page is supposed to be a single unit.
You'll turn the page and bam! You'll have that stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you know, basically, if you have a surprise on the right-hand page, and you open up the spread, you're already distracted by the right hand page, so that you don't really even look at the left hand page.
I think Bob Schreck said something like manga tells the story in American comic books. Internal, I'm probably quoting this wrong, but it was a good explanation for the difference between American comic books and manga.
Interesting.
No, yeah, I mean,
I imagine, like, that's big, broad, general.
Yeah, it is, but I think what he was saying generally is there is a clear difference between the two. Yeah.
No, I think also it's, you know, it's hard to make a definitive definition of North American comics.
I don't like the cheap tricks I usually see in American comic books where they usually, like...
But what is American comics? I mean, this is the thing I was getting about earlier about the labels, I think, now are so arbitrary and irrelevant. You know, is Robert Crumb underground anymore? He's published by the biggest book publishers in the world.
Well, him and Chris Ware sell better than Marvel and DC, so, you know...
But at that point, underground doesn't mean underground. It means it's just what the name for that type of work is.
Yeah,
I agree.
I still go to the head shops for my issues of Zap.
Went into a friend of mine was buying a pipe, and I was so upset there weren't, like, Zap comics in there, because I always had this fictional idea of what a head shop would be like.
Yeah. I mean, to this day, you know, stuff like Walking Dead and Saga still get referred to as indie comics, and they don't sell so much at any other publisher, you know?
Yes, indie in the sense that it's, I guess, the... Brandon was saying,
say non-corporate comics.
Yeah, that's well, now, like, I think Saga is a more mainstream book than most comics being published these days. I feel like that's a book I'll give most people, you know, as opposed to, I mean, I don't think, I mean, I you know, I don't know that the average person in the street would be able to get into whatever giant crossovers coming, like Villains Month. Like, really, it was like, you think as average person in the street is going to give a crap about Villains Month?
Me and Ash were talking about, what were we talking about? We were talking about Spider-Man. Oh, and you're just like, yeah, you know, kids love Spider-Man. And I was like, you know, Peter Parker isn't Spider-Man right now. It's like Dr. Octopus.
Now, Joe, reminder, we've been talking to Joe Keating, joined by Brandon Graham and Ash HG. We're near the end of our hour. So Joe, it will be at the Heritage Hall on Sunday from 11 to 5.
Right.
Joined by Edmund Brisson, Johnny Christmas. Anyone else?
Jason Copeland is going to be
Jason Copeland, who had a Daredevil issue announced. Congratulations,
oh,
Jason.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that's he's cool. doing one of the doing a fill-in issue
oh,
on that.
Oh, yeah. That's a good pedigree.
And Brandon, are you going to pop by the show?
I might be going to the Quarter Bin Comics.
Yeah. He likes a good Quarter Bin. You know what I got in Tacoma? A Dime Bin.
That
sounds awesome.
Just exists to shame me.
I found in there, I found some cool stuff, and I picked up Dark Horse Presents with a Mignola story, and I was like, oh, cool, I'll give that to Farrell, because he's there. Farrell right. Dalrymple's a big Mignola fan, and I'm showing some friends.
He has
like,
tattoos.
It was signed by Mignola.
Nice.
I'm like...
Was it just one bin, or was it...
It was a table. A table. Oh, 10-cent shit. Table. Yeah. That's a good life. So, thank you, Joe, so much for coming up.
Thanks for having me, man.
Is your first issue of the Hulk out? Or
yeah, first issue of the Hulk comes out in December. I think it's like December 13th or 11th, somewhere around there.
So. Or as they say in France, Decembre. Get your phone thing there going again. We'll play a song and we'll get rolling.
Ooh, did the ad say, like, you wouldn't like me when I'm French? And then he's like,
go away, Brandon.
Okay, thank you so much, Joe. It was good to see you, buddy.
Pop, pop, whiz. Viens, petite fille, dans mon comic strip. Viens